couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Aeronauts, A Marriage Story, Playmobil the Movie, and Dark Waters. Plus, a look at the Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the new Blu-ray release of Big Trouble in Little China. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is on the Disney/Fox front. One of the things a lot of people have been wondering for a long time since they had the Disney merger is when Disney was going to start incorporating the Fox properties into its own development, not the release schedule, because there's a bunch of Fox titles that are being released that are now being released under Disney just because they own them. But there's also been stuff in development, and that has been had the brakes put on it here and there. And we got a glimpse of the direction Disney's going when they launched the Disney Plus service, because you started seeing the elements that they own of Fox showing up in the Disney service. And a lot of those tended to be what I like to refer to as Disney adjacent. You had them put the Simpsons episodes. Well, it's a cartoon that kids like, but it's still a little bit edgy, so it has that Fox edge to it. But you would feel the Simpsons could fit in a Disney environment. You saw the same thing when you suddenly start going through some of the live action movies that are on the Disney Plus service. They have stuff like Home Alone, the Home Alone series. That feels like very much a Disney type of films. You can find Miracle on 34th Street, which is owned by Fox and is now a Disney property, and you can find that on the Disney Plus service as well. So you're not seeing Die Hard or Aliens or anything like that. You're starting to see the stuff that feels a little more Disney-like. And of course, everyone's primarily focusing on what's happening in the Marvel side. When are the X-Men going to be incorporated into the Marvel Universe? When are we going to get the Fantastic Four? But the piece of news we got this week is that Disney is going to be rebooting the Planet of the Apes series. And they're going to be using Wes Ball, who's best known for doing The Maze Runner. And that, you know, the first movie did okay, but, you know, the movie stumbled. I think that has less to do with the director, and it has more to do with the source material. Those young adult books have a great beginning source material, and they always tend to fade. You saw that with Divergent. You even saw that with Hunger Games. You know, always that first or second book, it generates interest, and then you only get the fans when everything's said and done at the end. But there's no indication of exactly what they're going to do. Are they going to branch it off? Because they did make this last run of the Planet of the Apes movies consistent with the films from the 60s and 70s, even though there's a lot of differences to them. And even at a certain point, Rise of the Planet of the Apes was kind of a semi-remake of Battle for the Planet of the Apes, where there's the uprising of the apes. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with this. The reason I say this is seems to be at least a safe bet for Disney to go into. They're not trying to suddenly reboot the Die Hard franchise, which is a clearly R-rated a franchise, and that was one that when they had a PG-13 rated version of it, it cheesed off a lot of people. And there's so much with the language and the rating for Die Hard. You get the same thing with the Alien movies. Those are very violent adult content movies. Planet of the Apes can exist in a PG-13 universe. And even then, you know, go back to the original Planet of the Apes, which I believe was rated G, if I'm not mistaken. That one is more considered family level entertainment, even though they're grown up stories. So I think Planet of the Apes is a safe bet to go. And I'm curious to see what they do with it, because they did wrap it up with War for the Planet of the Apes. But I have a feeling they're going to either reboot it. Now, that does not mean that you're going to have goofy Disney characters. You're not going to have the Olaf version of Caesar in this one, but I think they're going to put some new traction on this one. And to me, honestly, I'm looking forward to it. I'm curious to see where they're going with this, because this to me is an indicator of where they're going with their more grown up entertainment and not overtly child entertainment, which seems to be the focus right now of like Disney Plus and their immediate stuff. But I think they want to build upward out of that. The next piece of news I want to hit is just a little note. Adam Sandler said as a joke, I believe it was on the Howard Stern show, that if he doesn't get an Oscar for Uncut Gems, that he's going to deliberately make a terrible movie. And I find that a hilarious news story, because it's clearly Sandler goofing on his audience, and people picked that up and ran with it. And they're like, oh, and he's threatening this, and hey, he's being petulant or whatever. This is just Sandler being aware that he makes crap, and he's always known he makes crap. You go back to the movie Funny People, and there's a whole section of it where he makes fun of the crap that he makes, but he gets paid tons of money to do this. Why not keep doing this? Why struggle making four or five award films a year, do one every couple of years, and then just get paid money to have vacations and make crap? I may not be a fan of Adam Sandler's films, but I'm a fan of how he conducts himself in movies, because he plays the entirety of the process against itself. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Mulan. The second trailer of that is out. It opens on March 27th.
Citizens, we are under attack from northern invaders.
Their leader calls himself Bori Khan.
Fights alongside a witch.
No survivors.
By edict of his Imperial Majesty, every family must contribute one man to fight.
Have you no son?
I am blessed with two daughters. I will fight.
It is my duty to protect my family.
This one I find interesting, because when the first trailer dropped, I had no interest in it. I thought it looked kind of bland and lame and weak. And I'm like, well, why didn't you just rewatch the movie? What's interesting about this trailer is it gives it a feel much more like an authentic Asian historical film. This feels like something like Hero at this point, or House of Flying Daggers, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. And it looks like it's an authentically feeling, historic Chinese movie rather than just being this goofy little cartoon. Now, how they work the dragon in, you know, the sort of like the more silly elements of the whimsical elements of the animated stuff, how far they go with that is going to be interesting. But this one, this trailer makes it look actually quite serious and quite well done. So I'm kind of looking forward to this movie now, when originally I had zero interest in it. The other one I want to hit really quickly is, of course, the trailer for the new James Bond film, No Time to Die. Opens on April 8th.
Where's 007?
So you're not dead.
Hello, Q. I've missed you.
It's the most valuable asset this country has.
James Bond. License to kill. Only your skills die with your body. Mine will survive long after I'm gone.
History isn't kind to men who play God.
I've loved James Bond for years. I've seen all of the movies. I've binge watched all of them together in a relatively short amount of time, like over the course of a week. And I like Daniel Craig as James Bond. I just hope that this is a steering back towards the formula that can sustain itself, and that they don't try and develop the characters too much, because you develop James Bond too much and his character becomes too human, and then you can't move on to the next franchise. I'd like to see a little bit more of Remy Malek as the villain. Blofeld, I thought, was kind of a bust in the last one. I know. I hope we get a good, solid Bond movie. It looks like all the elements are there. The music, the fast cars, the explosions, the gunplay, and of course, Daniel Craig looking like he's chewing glass while he's making the movie. So, and that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Playmobil, the movie, and A Marriage Story. ¶¶ at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Playmobil the Movie. A woman travels to an animated world to find her brother.
Rex Dasher, for your next mission, we're partnering you with two civilians, Del and Marla.
Hello?
Over the last several months, a top secret organization has caused citizens from different lands to vanish into thin air.
That's not good.
I need you two to help rescue them. We're running out of time.
I mean, there's no chance of danger or anything, right?
I'm 100% almost sure.
I'll admit, I don't know much about it. And the reason I don't know much about it is because they didn't screen it for us. This, I think, was originally supposed to open in August or September. And it got bumped into December. Now, we've got other movies that are out right now, but these are in limited release. The Aeronauts is in limited release until it hits the Amazon Prime streaming service. And Dark Waters is rolling out as an expansion. These are all movies that have a very specific trajectory. This Playmobil movie is the only one that's just getting a release. And it's kind of in that donut hole between Thanksgiving and Christmas that nobody likes to release a movie as a wide release at this point. And I think they just buried it. I think this movie got developed when the Lego movie became a massive, massive hit. And then Warner Brothers oversaturated that market. They did a Lego Batman movie, which was a lot of fun. Then they did this Lego Ninjago movie, which is cool. I've got my cousins have come over and we'll watch the Lego Ninjago movie and they love a heck out of it. But it has a very limited market. Ninjago isn't something that anyone really cares about if you're over 12. And then they did the Lego movie too earlier this year. It kind of flopped. I mean, it didn't flop in the sense that it lost a ton of money, but it certainly was not a massive hit the way that first Lego movie was. And I think part of that Lego movie good juju was burned off with all the Lego movie releases that Warner Brothers did. But also, just Lego Movie 2 wasn't as good of a film. And I think the love affair that people have had with Chris Pratt has died down a little bit because, you know, once you become famous and arrogant and kind of full of yourself and you lose that sort of cute element that Chris Pratt had. And when he got divorced from Anna Faris, and then there were rumors of canoodling outside of it. And then there were rumors of maybe some ego issues with some of the Marvel stuff. Then you're like, oh, we no longer see you as this cute, cuddly guy from Parks and Rec. That may have impacted it a little bit from a fan base. This looks like it might be fun, but it looks like it's like lower level than the Lego Ninjago movie. Looks like it's going to have some irreverence, but no more than direct to Netflix series that was based on a movie originally. So they didn't show it to us. Not a big surprise. I'm going to probably have to say the Playmobil movie most likely totally sucks.
It sucks.
The next movie on the list is A Marriage Story. Noah Baumbach writes and directs this film about a marriage that has crumbled into a bitter divorce fight.
So I'll tell Charlie what's happening, and Cassie, you then hand him the envelope.
I just get nervous.
Well, can you unserve? What do you mean, like take it back? Charlie and I are getting a divorce, Mom. You can't be friends with him anymore.
Dima!
Charlie!
Mom!
What?
You know, most people in my business, you're just transactions to them. I like to think of you as people.
Oh, okay, good.
You remind me of myself on my second marriage.
This is one of those Netflix movies that had a qualifying theatrical run, and it has finished its qualifying theatrical run, much like The Irishman did, where The Irishman dropped at Thanksgiving onto the streaming service. This is now dropping this weekend on Netflix, even though it's been available for the last 3 or 4 weeks in limited theatrical release. But most people are going to watch this on Netflix. And this is Netflix pushing their release strategy. This is Netflix thumbing its nose at people like Steven Spielberg, who tried to change the release window and saying, heck with you, we're going to put these on here, these high-profile streaming movies that are high quality by major directors. And they've stepped up their game this year. NATO theater owners, you got to watch out because people don't want to leave their homes. You got to keep having a reason to bring somebody out to theaters for the theaters to work, and you're already emulating homes in the theater with Barca loungers and drink service. Now, the movie itself, it's a good movie. It's a Noah Baumbach movie. If you don't like Noah Baumbach stuff, he's sort of the modern equivalent of Woody Allen. That's that neurotic New York filmmaker. And in a lot of this, there's a lot of truth in this movie because he himself has been through some bitter breakups. And I think he used to be married to Jennifer Jason Leigh, and then they had a rough divorce, and I think they have a son, and they had to deal with custody issues. And part of this, a lot of it is, it's mostly told from Adam Driver's point of view. Adam Driver being the husband in this situation. And he's sort of this artist himself, and Scarlett Johansson is his muse. And the character plays an actress. And you can see sort of shades of maybe what Greta Gerwig was going through with him, where for a while there, Greta Gerwig, she was mostly defined by Noah Baumbach's work. She was only in his movies and had a couple minor roles. Now she's out there directing her own stuff. And you sort of see that happening in this movie where she's splitting with him, not just from a romantic sense, but from an artistic sense, doing her own thing. And he's reacting to that. And I think they might still be together, or they're on and off together. But you can see there's that Baumbach is working through a lot of stuff, not just with his first marriage, but with his relationship with Greta Gerwig and the fact that she's differentiating herself as an artist and not relying on him for her own fame. The performances are great. Scarlett Johansson's fantastic in it. Adam Driver's fantastic in it. They both really throw down their emotions, and they expose it on screen. I think this also shows the awfulness of divorce, and it shows partly, not it doesn't deconstruct it, but you can see why divorces become acrimonious so quickly. If there's money involved, it's going to suck. The best time to get divorced is if you're both broke, because no lawyer is going to want to touch it. They'll say, well, we can do this thing, and for $1,000, we'll draw up the paperwork, but you got to figure out who wants the crappy sofa and the DVD collection, because there's not enough money in this to do it. Now, if you've got savings, and you've got high incomes, and you've got a lot of property, yes, then the lawyers will come in, and they'll carve that up. And it shows how this escalates, and it shows how it depends on who files first and where you file. And if you're in different cities, especially if you're like on a bi-coastal type thing, there is a lot of this where Baumbach appears to be trying to tell both sides of the story, but he just can't stop going, well, I understand why she's doing it, and this is the way it is, but that witch did this to me, you know, and it's him kind of not giving as fair of a shake to the other side, but it also shows how the lawyers take over, and the lawyers are what makes it ugly. And it shows that the lawyers, it's a notch in the belt. It's not, they're really not trying to help people. The lawyers in divorces aren't really, and the ones that do try and help people, they're like, well, I'm trying to help you, but, you know, eventually it's going to turn into this. It's going to get ugly. Alan Alda plays the lawyer he first goes to, who's really a nice guy trying to do the right thing, but also trying to prepare him for the worst. So I'm happily married, and this movie will convince people who are happily married to stay happily married. And if you're going through a divorce, you get to see how awful it can become. So I think this is most worthwhile for the people who've been through this sort of situation, because otherwise for somebody like me, I'm like, well, you guys are all idiots anyways. But still, it's a well-done movie. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Aeronauts and Dark Waters. Why can't we be friends? Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews, and we'll jump into the air with The Aeronauts. Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones star as 19th century balloonists who take an experimental flight to learn about how the weather works in the upper atmosphere.
Gentlemen, to predict the weather could save hundreds of thousands of lives.
We are scientists, not fortune tellers.
Prove them wrong, Jones.
I'm a really good aeronaut. I want to use what I'm good at.
Women don't belong in balloons.
Miss Wren, I need to make studies of the air.
I'm not a coachman for hire.
You are the only person who could fly us higher than anyone has ever been. So will you?
This is an interesting movie because it's, you know, no pun intended, flying a little bit more under the radar than the Netflix releases this year. The Netflix releases like Irishman and The Marriage Story have gotten a lot of buzz because of it going on to Netflix and having a limited run in theaters. This is Amazon Prime's version of it. And you're getting a qualified theatrical run for The Aeronauts before this movie debuts on Amazon Prime. So it feels like it's getting less traction, partly because it also doesn't have the power, the star power behind The Irishman, for example. But it's an interesting movie because it is Amazon trying to follow this new pattern a little bit, you know, kind of cautiously follow the new pattern that Netflix is aggressively pushing in terms of their release. Now, the movie itself is, in a lot of ways, it's a big screen movie because it's this balloon flight. They spend a lot on the effects of the balloon, and you get to see the sweeping views of the world from way up in the atmosphere, high above the clouds, which, I mean, somebody like me, I mean, I just took a plane trip not too long ago. That's kind of become mundane for us in the everyday world. But back in the 19th century, you didn't get to see the world that way ever unless you went up in a balloon like this. And the other thing is, this was just a basket attached to this big bag of hot air. It was 19th century technology propelling people upwards and then hoping to get back down to Earth without dying. And so it shows you a lot of the dangers that were associated with that and, you know, keeping the balloon afloat and making it work and, you know, keeping the scientific equipment to the point that they can read stuff. You don't want to ascend too slowly, but you also don't want to ascend too quickly, and how you may have to lose weight or gain weight or adjust the balloon pressure. You know, nowadays balloons, hot air balloons are a full science, but back then this was still experimental and it was less about flight and more about learning about the natural world around you. So it has a great scientific and historical implication to this. Now, they do take some liberties with the history behind it. For example, Felicity Jones's character is kind of manufactured. There were women that did do some ballooning, but it was, I mean, this is 19th century Europe. It's 19th century royal science. This was not a feminist time. And I get the idea of saying, well, we want to put a female in here so it's empowering for girls. But it does annoy me when you have a movie that ignores history, ignores that history would allow this to happen. I mean, yes, there were female balloonists, but they weren't in the Royal Academy of Science. They just weren't back then. And that's just the way it was. You know, the 19th century was certainly a sexist time. But they do play around with the characters a little bit. But overall, I mean, Jones and Redmayne have good chemistry together. And they showed that with The Theory of Everything. I'll watch Felicity Jones in almost anything. I'm a big fan of hers. And I think Eddie Redmayne, you know, keeps the lid on this performance pretty well. It has beautiful views. And it's worth checking out. It's not a big super action movie. It is a historical drama at its heart. But overall, it still works. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Dark Waters. Mark Ruffalo plays a Cincinnati attorney who takes on chemical giant DuPont for polluting dangerous chemicals into the groundwater of a West Virginia town.
How many did you lose?
190.
190 cows.
You tell me nothing's wrong here. That's chemicals, I'm telling you.
I'm seeing documents. I don't understand.
They're hiding something.
That chemical.
What if you drank it?
Drank it? It's like saying, what if I swallowed a tire?
What if whatever's killing those cows is in the drinking water?
This is an interesting movie because I find it pairs really interesting with the Report, which was another Adam Driver movie. You know, I talked about Marriage Story, but it's an Adam Driver movie from Amazon that also had a limited theatrical run, similar to The Aeronauts. The Report was about a government document, a 7,000-page government report with annotations. How can you make that interesting? Well, they made that movie very interesting. Dark Waters is a very similar thing because it's a legal case. It's about them filing briefs and doing discovery and looking up documents and doing interviews. It's not exactly a lickety-split superhero film. But it's an interesting movie, and it's a significant movie because this stuff does go on. And even though it is a little bit of a slow burn and it does run over 2 hours, it does have a very relevant information. This is the kind of stuff that we see always showing up, water being polluted. We're seeing this in the movie Aaron Brockovich is a great example of a movie which had a similar theme to it. We've got the Flint water crisis. Then, yeah, that was just incompetency that caused that. But you can see where that can be devastating to a community. And groundwater is important. And I know there's a lot of people out there that says lower government regulations. But this shows that there are certain things that should be regulated. This shows there's legal and health and personal and human repercussions. I had a chance to talk to Rob Bellette, who is the main character of this, which is the lawyer that Mark Ruffalo portrays in this movie. Just a couple real quick cuts. The first one is him talking about the perspective of this because and why I agree with him finding this important in terms of why this issue is something that transcends corporate tribalism or politics.
As a lawyer, you start seeing documents that indicate an entire community is being exposed, if not the entire country, to a toxic chemical, and that nobody seems to have been told about it. I think you have a duty, an obligation to warn people. And, you know, since that time, since I saw that information indicating this public health threat, that's what I've been working on for years, is to try to get that information out and use my skills as a lawyer the best I can to do that.
Along with that last answer, I also asked him about future cases, because this is not just an isolated incident. I mean, we're talking about this stuff being everywhere. This is ongoing. And here's what he had to say about that.
This particular movie focuses on one of the chemicals, PFOA. And after we finally dug out all this information about this chemical, PFOA, and what it does, and realized it was all over the country, we have been realizing now that there are related chemicals, hundreds of related man-made chemicals that are out there in our environment that we are just now starting to learn about as well. So we're actually pursuing a new case, trying to require the companies that put those chemicals out, knowing that not only would they get out into the water, but they would get into us, into people, and get into our blood. Trying to require that the companies that did that pay for all the studies that are needed to tell us what they'll do to us. So I've tried to explain a lot of that. I've got a new book also that's come out called Exposure that talks about how we've kind of morphed from when we've known about this one chemical in one community to learning about this broader group of chemicals that are now all over the planet. And that really require us to take action to look at what are all of these doing to us.
So yeah, that's a scary thing in itself. And dark water should be a bit of an eye opener, and it should be kind of terrifying to watch. But it's a well-made movie, and it restrains itself appropriately. And that may make it not as sexy as some movies would be. I mean, yeah, Mark Ruffalo doesn't turn into a big, huge green rage monster, but he does give a knockout performance in a significant movie that should make us all want to buy a bunch of Brita filters. So I'm going to have to say this movie kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to look at The Mandalorian, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Big Trouble in Little China.
And the Magnificent.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about a TV show, actually, and that is The Mandalorian. This live-action series on Disney Plus follows a bounty hunter who violates his code when he becomes attached to one of his targets, a child who appears to be a young version of Yoda.
Bounty hunting is a complicated profession. They said you were coming. They said you were the best in the parsec. Would you agree? Mandalorian, look outside. They are waiting for you.
Yeah? Good.
Now, this is a TV show, and I know that this debuted several weeks ago, but the reason I've taken a little bit of time to talk about it is I wanted to get a couple episodes out there. I wanted the audience to have a chance to see the episodes. I wanted myself to have a chance to see the episodes. I didn't want to just review this based solely on the first episode. Because there is this knee-jerk reaction that happens, and you see this a lot in film Twitter, where people just overreact to this. There is this overreaction of like, oh my God, The Mandalorian's the greatest thing ever, and it's what I've ever wanted, and Star Wars, isn't it awesome? You got to realize, The Mandalorian is a restrained television show. I said to somebody once, I said, if you were to take the first three or four episodes of The Mandalorian and release them as a movie, it would have flopped. Because you expect the spectacle and the big explosions in Star Wars. These are much smaller. It reminds me of when the Daredevil Netflix series started and people were having a fit over how awesome it was. And I watched it and I go, it's okay. It's better than that crappy Daredevil movie with Ben Affleck. But I remember saying, it's not like the beginning and the end of stunt work and effects. And, you know, they haven't over-realized comic books or anything, and it certainly doesn't hold a candle to the Avengers movies or even the standalone Marvel movies, like something like Ant-Man. And I felt the same way when I was watching The Mandalorian. It's a nice little TV series. It has the effects that you expect from Star Wars. It has the sound effects and the look and the feel, and it certainly captures that Western style. It's this mix between a Kurosawa film and a spaghetti Western, which, you know, Kurosawa was essentially, you know, Japanese Westerns in a lot of ways. And so you realize that with this movie, where you have the outlaws and you have the vast deserts and the way stations in the middle of nowhere and the creepy, weird characters that he's got to navigate in this dirty underbelly of a world on the outer rim gone wrong that isn't ruled by any sort of official power. And you get that with The Mandalorian. One thing I also like about The Mandalorian, with the exception of the Baby Yoda thing, is it doesn't latch on to too much of the original nostalgia from the series. I mean, yeah, you got the Mandalorian armor, but you don't have characters showing up constantly who are from the original series. It establishes something completely insulated from the other elements that are going on, which is what the extended universe stuff did so well when you were talking about video games and role-playing games and comic books and standalone novels in the 90s. That's what makes this work so well, is it is isolated from the rest of the story because you're talking about an entire galaxy of characters and material you can mine. And that's, I think, why The Mandalorian works. The biggest problem Mandalorian is going to have going forward is that it just breathes too much. It's just going to be this sort of buddy cop roaming film about the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda just going from place to place to place with no real furthering of the storyline. That's my worry as what's going to happen, that they're not going to uncover enough, and it's just going to be them going from place to place to place and fighting people who are chasing them. Because that's where it's starting to go into, you know, four episodes in. The other thing that's interesting about this one is they're releasing it once a week as opposed to the Netflix model of binge watching it, which in a way I like it because you have something to look forward to every week as opposed to just blowing through the entire season in a couple days. Overall, I think The Mandalorian looks great. It's got a great feel. And so far, four or five episodes in, it's good. I hope it sustains it, but continues a story that can regenerate and refresh itself periodically, certainly going into other seasons. So I'm going to say for right now, at least, The Mandalorian rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Of course, Frozen won again last weekend. For the whole 5-day weekend or 6-day weekend, it still made $125 million. It's like over $300 million now. Frozen is a huge hit. Knives Out did quite well in the $40 millions after the weekend. Ford versus Ferrari is still sticking around. Queen and Slim did okay. I mean, it was considered a hit because it came in fifth with $16 million, but it wasn't a runaway hit. This week, you're going to get another win by Frozen. There's really nothing that's going to be big enough to fight it. I think Playmobil is going to crash into it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight goes on to John Carpenter's classic 80s film, Big Trouble in Little China, the collector's edition. This is of course, a cult classic, and Scream Factory released it, and they've released a bunch of the old John Carpenter movies, especially from his heyday. The movie itself is completely bonkers. Kurt Russell stars in the John Carpenter film about a truck driver who helps his friend save his kidnapped fiancée from human traffickers who also happen to be sorcerers.
This is Jack Burton in the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there.
There is a hidden world where ancient evil weaves a modern mystery.
What's going on here? Is this some kind of
magic? The darkest magic.
They call it Little China.
Finally, we shall bring order out of chaos.
It's where Big Trouble was waiting for Jack Burton.
Somebody, I don't care who, tell me what is going on.
My destiny rests in your capable hands.
Hey, I'll do my best.
This is in the middle of John Carpenter's greatest run. I would say from, well, probably, gosh, all the way to the 70s, starting with stuff like Assault on Precinct 13, but not really galvanizing until you get to, like, Halloween. And you go from that run from Halloween through The Thing and The Fog and into Big Trouble and They Live and Prince of Darkness. This is Carpenter at his best. And this is an interesting film because it is so whimsical and silly and bizarre. Big Trouble in Little China is out there as a story. And part of that's because W.D. Richter, who helped write The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, was involved in writing this movie. And that's how people will say, well, it's really kind of a unofficial sequel. Don't try to tie this to Buckaroo Banzai because it doesn't really work as well. It's just an out there wackadoodle movie that's a lot of fun. Part of it's because Kurt Russell's such a bumbling idiot in it, because John Carpenter wanted to make a movie with his Asian cast and these Asian heroes, and Dennis Dunn, who plays the Asian hero, he wasn't able to get a movie made with him, so he had to put a white guy in there, which is Kurt Russell, but he made Kurt Russell an idiot, and he's the big hero in this, but really it's the Asians who do all the work, and it was a way of John Carpenter kind of playing the business against itself. In order to get this movie made, he had to make it less Asian oriented. You gotta have a white guy in there. You have Kim Cattrall, you have a white girl in there. And they're both kind of morons in the film. And that's what makes it a lot of fun. This is probably the funnest John Carpenter movie in this run. You know, right around Prince of Darkness and They Live, it gets really dark and heavy and less fun. This one is just a hoot. It's a lot of fun. The action plays off of everything from Speed Racer to old Kung Fu movies. And it's just an out there crazy run through Chinatown. And it's an enjoyable movie, and it holds up way better than I remember it being. I think it actually is a better movie now, looking back in nostalgia, than it even was in the 80s when it came out. But now, of course, the Blu-ray comes with a bunch of stuff. They've got new audio commentary by producer Larry Franco and a new audio commentary from the special effects guys. They've got all the old stuff, the audio commentary, theatrical trailers, TV spots, gag reel, music videos, extended scenes, all that stuff from previous releases. They've got an entire new disc that's loaded with interviews from all these different actors in the film and the writer, and looking at the way the story was constructed and how things were put together. And there's other special features and other featurettes on this, but it's this loaded second disc. It's an absolutely great purchase if you love this movie and you want to continue on with it. And it's also available in like a steelbook, and I think you can get it with like a special a poster and a collective lithograph. So there are different versions of it that you can step up with your pricing if you want all the little bells, the physical bells and whistles that come along with it. But I'm going to have to say that Big Trouble in Little China, the collector's edition, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other releases this week on DVD and Blu-ray include Ready or Not, The Goldfinch, Game of Thrones Season 8, and that's it for this week. Next week when I come back, I'm going to be talking about Jumanji, The Next Level, Richard Jewell, Black Christmas, and Bombshell. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.